Good day. This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, August 26, 2013. I'm Christina Thomas. The Jazz Eureka 2013 Festival begins Friday, September 13th, and will run through Sunday, the 15th. This three-day event will include both free and ticketed events. Performers include the Fayetteville Jazz Collective, Richard Bruton Quintet, Walter Savage Trio, and recording artist Spyro Gyra. Information is available on the web at eurekasprings.org. KUAF is supported by Arcom Printing, located on the hillside just east of the Township and College intersection in Fayetteville. Arcom Printing provides printing, copying, and digital output services. ArcomPrinting.com or 444-7711. Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, grasshoppers can be pesky. And in the dog days of summer, we often see them jumping in and out of grass or onto our windshields. Today, we go grasshopper hunting with our Ozarks at Large insect expert. Plus, a new award was presented this weekend and the latest installment of Arkansongs. But first, a new national report card by a nonprofit nursing home resident advocacy group gives failing marks to elder care facilities in Arkansas. Families for Better Care, a Florida-based group, scored, ranked, and graded states on 8 different federal quality measures, ranging from staffing shortages to the percentage of facilities with severe deficiencies. Arkansas is ranked 39th in a state-by-state survey and received a D grade for low marks in several key areas. Martha Deaver is president of Arkansas Advocates for Nursing Home Residents. Deaver says the state received a poor rating because it does not have enough registered nurses caring for nursing home residents.
Last year, I made an FOI request for the violations on Arkansas's nursing home residents, which there were 232 nursing homes that were Medicare and Medicaid funded. The list I received back after my FOI request was very, very shocking. There were over 2,300 violations cited for actual harm or the potential for death.
Deaver says federal and state officials need to decertify Arkansas nursing homes that receive millions in taxpayer dollars each year, but do not comply with important laws and standards. As reports of abuse and neglect at elder care facilities continue, Deaver admits there needs to be more accountability. Rogers New Tech High School opened for the first time just a week ago, but the school district is already looking at expanding the school. Jim White, Chief Operating Officer for Rogers Public Schools, says while the architects haven't even begun designing Phase 2 of New Tech High, district administrators have a good idea of what will be built in the roughly 5,000-square-foot expansion.
It would mainly include two things, of course, classroom and some administrative space and probably some additional parking. We need to understand that this is taking place in our annex building that is actually a former middle school. That's why we had to go in and do the phase one was simply a remodel of some existing middle school space to accommodate high school classes, and that's what we did. And now that we have these 300 in our core area, our place to feed the kids and have some meetings, now we need to add some really mainly classroom space.
White says the school district is already considering the expansion to the new school as they feel that the space will soon be needed.
We're starting only with these younger grades, only 9th and 10th graders. So next year, as these 10th graders move up to 11th, you want to have a new group of 9th graders come in, and then the next year after that. We filled our 300. We could only take 300. The kids are very excited about the program, and we feel like we're not going to have any problem getting to 600. It's certainly our hope.
Though the school district was denied state partnership money to build out the expansion, White says the school district has enough money in its building fund to complete the project by the beginning of the next school year. One area city is looking at ways to increase its tree canopy. Bentonville City Council will soon consider an ordinance that is aimed at doing just that. Troy Galloway is the city's director of planning services. He says previously, developers have been more focused on planting shrubs and other ornamental trees rather than shade trees that add to the city's tree canopy.
In particular, with a lot of the commercial and multifamily developments that we've had over the last 10 to 15 years, those developers spent a lot of money to install landscape that unfortunately, in many cases, was not maintained and in many cases did not achieve the primary goals that the city had set forth with expanding the tree canopy and beautifying the city. Now, to be sure, there are a lot of examples out there that run contrary to those trends and folks that have done a very good job of establishing and maintaining nice landscapes and nice additions to the city's tree canopy. But in the whole, that was not necessarily the case. So I think the Planning Commission recognized that.
Galloway says the ordinance aims to reverse the trend, pushing developers to plant more shade trees instead of shrubberies. And he believes that if the ordinance is approved, it will have a substantial impact in the short term.
As developments come through the process, people will see an immediate impact. But I think the really good news is I think it's going to be relatively cost neutral on developers because we're simply shifting around the cost. And instead of, instead of requiring so many shrubs and ornamental plants, the emphasis is going to be on shade trees.
The ordinance would have no impact on current landowners or developments. Governor Mike Beebe hopes a newly enacted law targeting human trafficking will make a difference. In his weekly radio address, Beebe said the legislation, which passed both chambers unanimously, will allow victims to now qualify for special services and law enforcement officers will receive specialized training.
With its enactment of our new law, Arkansas strengthened its stance against human trafficking more than any other state, according to the Washington-based Polaris Project. The group advocates for stricter laws against human trafficking, and it had high praise for Arkansas's new law. The legislation expands the definition of human trafficking and makes it a Class Y felony punishable by 10 to 40 years or life in prison.
The governor says awareness is spreading in Arkansas, thanks to the efforts of national and local organizations. 10 Arkansas airports will receive a total of $4.2 million in U.S. Department of Transportation grants for facilities improvements and upgrades. Among those airports receiving money are the Carroll County Airport in Berryville, which will receive $162,000 for a perimeter fence to minimize wildlife hazards. The Bentonville Municipal Airport is receiving just more than $500,000 to improve the runway safety area. And Carter Field in Rogers will receive $223,000 to rehabilitate the apron, design the east aircraft parking aprons, and seal coat the taxiway on the east side of the airport. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals won one, lost one, as they returned home to face the Arkansas Travelers. The Nats fell to the Travs 6-5 on Saturday, but defeated their rivals from North Little Rock yesterday with a final score of 3-2. The series concludes tonight at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. Forecast calls for mostly clear skies tonight, with overnight lows from 65 in northwest Arkansas to 71 in the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny tomorrow with highs in the low to mid-90s. Mostly clear Tuesday evening with lows from 66 to 72. Unemployment in Arkansas hits an unusual milestone. Roby Brock has more in this Talk Business Arkansas Weekly Update.
Arkansas's jobless rate rose 0.1% in July to 7.4%, while the U.S. unemployment rate fell 0.2% to 7.4%. It is the first time that state and national unemployment have intersected since April 2008, when both jobless rates stood at 5%. Since that month, the U.S. unemployment rate spiked to as high as 10%, while the state jobless rate only climbed as high as 8%. During the recovery years since 2008 and 2009, Arkansas's unemployment rate remained lower than the national rate until now. Walmart sponsored a manufacturing summit in Orlando, Florida on Thursday aimed at recruiting jobs from overseas to the U.S. The summit, part of a 10-year, $50 billion onshoring effort, included nearly 500 supplier companies, 32 state governments, and major retail movers and shakers. Pilgrim's Pride will be closing its Batesville poultry processing plant the next 60 days, according to local economic development officials. However, a new buyer may surface. As many as 400 workers could be affected. Batesville officials said that Ozark Mountain Poultry, located in Rogers, Arkansas, could be interested in purchasing the facility. Brigham McCallum, former acting administrator for the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, said while the investigation continues into the Pegasus pipeline rupture in Faulkner County, from a policy standpoint, the nation should continue to utilize pipelines. McCallum, who was in Arkansas to speak at the Clinton School of Public Service, said Pipelines will continue to be the primary form of energy transportation in the U.S. As a conferee on the Farm Bill, Senator John Bozeman says he's not sure about the outcome of the measure that could affect one-fifth of Arkansas's economy. "I don't know exactly how we're going to do it," said Bozeman. The committee has until September 30th, less than 6 weeks, to come up with a viable compromise before the current extension of the Farm Bill expires. America's Car-Mart posted second quarter net income of $7.5 million. That was down from $8.1 million 1 year ago. Revenues climbed higher to $122.5 million, well ahead of the $110 million earned in last year's second quarter. And same-store revenues grew 5.6% on a year-over-year basis. Finally, Arkansas Workers' Compensation Commission CEO Alan McClain is leaving the state agency and will join the Workers' Compensation Research Institute, an independent nonprofit based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. McClain says he'll be succeeded by James Daniel, current AWCC Assistant CEO. The transition will take place on September 3rd. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Arkansas update.
Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large comes from Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Timothy Dennis. Crazy Chester followed me, and he cut me in the fall. As most people are probably aware, that's Rick Danko of the band singing their famous track, The Wait. But as most people probably aren't aware, including me until very recently, Crazy Chester was actually a living, breathing resident of Fayetteville back when the band was romping around Arkansas under the name The Hawks. According to Levon Helm's autobiography, This Wheel's on Fire, Crazy Chester was a man the band members knew who would come into town on Saturdays, and with his pair of holstered cap guns, he would patrol Dixon Street to keep the peace like some sort of Hopalong Cassidy. A new award has been named after Crazy Chester, and local artist Hank Kaminsky was given the task of creating the award. On Friday afternoon, he joined Ozarks at Large and a studio audience at the Fayetteville Public Library for a discussion which he started by saying why he agreed to make the award, which was given out over the weekend during the Fayetteville Roots Festival.
I'd like to get a ticket to go to the shows, and so I always managed to figure out a way to kind of trade my way in, and they had a desire for an award, and I've been working on some awards lately. I really enjoy it, and so I'm going to give them an award, now I get a free ticket.
Well, so how does one win this award?
It has to do with your contribution to the city and the musical life of the city, and I imagine that a jury of stern-looking young men choose someone and get the award.
Are you just given the open-ended task, create an award that fits this?
That's one way to look at it, yeah. It isn't really open, and it's ringed by my own particular limitations. And I just try to make something that'll work according to my own ethic, my own aesthetic, and the kind of thing that they're trying to achieve. And this award is really, really interesting to me because I don't know if you, I did a bunch of sculpture out there, and you could see it everywhere. It seems like it's everywhere right now. And predominant theme in my sculpture is the energy moving through fields. And when you catch it right then as a piece of sculpture, you're sort of freezing a moment in time. And that's what this was designed for. There's a layer of noise underneath everything, and up comes a little spurt of energy, and out of the center of that spurt of energy comes the words, Crazy Chester.
Saturday evening's Roots Festival lineup on the KUAF main stage at Walton Arts Center included a ceremony to name the first recipient of the Crazy Chester Award, Curly Miller of the Old 78s. Curly passed away earlier this year and is missed by many. Here's a performance by the Old 78s from late last year at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville. Thank you.
for having us.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, the nation celebrates the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. We will visit Martin Luther King's archives.
If you look on his report card, he got a C in logic. So he wasn't being logical, telling black people, just walk peacefully in front of these whites.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now, just ahead this afternoon at 1 o'clock, here on KUAF 91.3 FM. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas. On a hot afternoon last week, I spent some time as an entomologist. Our Ozarks at Large insect expert, Dr. Donald Steinkraus, took me to a field on Owl Holler Road near West Fork to go grasshopper hunting. Luckily, Dr. Steinkraus brought our tools.
This is the old-time classic tool of an entomologist, an insect net. And this is what you call a sweep net. It's kind of durable and tough, and you can sweep it through vegetation and collect the insects which are in the vegetation. This one is a little bit sort of a hybrid. It's got a clear area so you can see what you've caught in the bottom. But these are a classic tool. But anyway, so the classic image of a nerd is sort of running around with a net, right?
Right.
And you're going to have to run around with a net, too.
Okay.
The way you catch insects is to sweep the net with some force through the grass. Dr. Steinkraus took the first sweep at it to demonstrate.
So this is Johnson grass, an invasive, non-native species of grass. So I guess we'll sweep through here and see if we can catch anything. We might not. So just go back and forth. And then... Okay, already you can see a whole lot of Orthoptera. These are little grasshopper, or I'm not sure what they are yet because they're jumping so much, but we'll capture some and look at them more closely.
As Dr. Steinkraus mentioned, grasshoppers are in the order Orthoptera, shared with crickets and katydids. The grasshoppers are in the family Acridata and are characterized by having short antennae. As we walk through the grass trying to catch the grasshoppers, they jump up into the air and then land back down and burrow under the grass. In order to look at them more closely, we needed some more tools.
I brought a hand lens, too, because sometimes you have to look at small features on an insect to identify it and get it closer to what you think it is. And the last thing I have is a bucket that we can sweep net some of these and dump our net material into the bucket and see what we got.
Because there are so many different insects in the country, around 300 different species of grasshoppers, with about 30 native to Arkansas, entomologists need a key to identify them. So Dr. Steinkraus also brought along a book. Entomologists are very into books.
This is an absolutely excellent book on grasshoppers and katydids and crickets of the U.S. by John Caponera. It's really a top-notch book, because I'm not an expert on grasshoppers, though I would like to be.
So once we sweep the grass, dump our catch into the bucket, Dr. Steinkraus pulls out a grasshopper, and we begin to identify it by looking closely at its characteristics and comparing them to images and descriptions in the book.
Eastern Myrmia.
Oh, here's the slant-faced ones.
Eastern Myrmia.
I think... Yeah, you think it's Eastern Myrmia?
Maybe.
This one here?
It kind of has the stripe along its face.
Or how about this one here, the clipped wing? Here's what we have to do now. We need to... Oh. It's awfully pretty, this one is. We need to go back here.
This was a slant-faced grasshopper with lovely green and tan colors. In the hand, beautiful. But in the grass, among the live green blades and dry tan blades, it really blended in. Dr. Steinkraus calls this camouflage crypsis. We determine that it is the handsome grasshopper. Most grasshoppers have one generation per year, and the overwintering stage is the eggs, usually in soil or in plant material. The nymphs hatch out in the early spring or summer. We also found some nymphs.
Grasshoppers have incomplete metamorphosis. They have what we call nymphs, and the nymphs look a lot like the adult, except for they're smaller and their wings aren't as well developed. So these little nymphs are very abundant in this grass, and they can't fly yet because their wings aren't fully developed, but they'll molt and grow, and then by maybe September they'll be mature and then they'd be big.
He mentioned flying and likens grasshoppers to birds. There are some species that have very colorful wings and blues, yellows, oranges, and reds that can be seen as they jump from the grass and fly back down. I caught one with red wings, though carrying a recorder made it difficult to catch, so I had to put my microphone down as I swept the grass. This guy was what I call a big daddy.
Yep, Christina caught a monster. It's the biggest one yet today, right?
Yes. My entomologist skills are improving.
Yeah, she went off on her own and she caught it. She's better off without me. This is a big, strong, hefty guy, isn't he?
It's big.
And got pretty bands on its wings, little spots. It's got some little stripes on its femur.
It's a big head.
It's got a big head, doesn't it? Look, he's trying to spit up on me. I don't want to hurt him, though. Let's see if we can get his wings out. He doesn't like that at all. I don't want to hurt him. Look at that beautiful red wing. Isn't that a pretty thing?
Wow, yeah.
So you don't think of grasshoppers as being beautiful, but just as pretty as a bird, a cardinal or something. Okay, well, we can try to identify it.
We determined that this large gray and brown band-winged grasshopper with large dark spots on its forewings and bright orange or rose-colored wings is a Para delphora phenocoptera. Please excuse my pronunciation. With many of these insects, the males make noises to attract females. These are called calling songs. A male uses his song to advertise to females his species, location, sexual readiness, and quality as a mate. Most of these songs are produced by stridulation, rubbing two parts of the body together, such as the forewing rubbing against the hind wing, or the femur against the forewing. This is mainly in crickets and katydids, though. The band-winged grasshoppers use crepitation, or wing snapping, to produce sounds while flying. This is sort of like a sail on a sailboat snapping in the wind.
So how do they hop, do you think?
With those big back legs.
Yeah, so they have this really big femur. It's full of muscles. Their tibia is really narrow. It's like on a horse, like, you know, a racehorse. They got a thin little, you know, tibia or foreleg, and they can move it fast with this. They have like a special spring mechanism in their legs for hopping. So they got a bunch of defenses.
Most of these grasshoppers will lay their eggs and die by late fall. Last week, we also caught a differential grasshopper, a dark one with a herringbone black mark on its femur. In addition, a Kiowa rangeland grasshopper, one with a pale yellow band on its hind wings. Not a grasshopper, but we did catch a round-tipped conehead, a katydid, which is responsible for the nightly sounds you hear here in Arkansas. During the day, though, you're listening to cicadas. Dr. Donald Steinkraus is an entomologist with the University of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large. A showdown of sorts was held Saturday morning, organized by gun rights group Arkansas Carry, to illustrate that an Arkansas law that went into effect August 16th allows legal gun owners to openly carry loaded weapons in public. Steve Jones, chairman of Arkansas Carry, addressed a crowd of 40 participants, made up of men, women, and children, before they headed out.
The whole country's watching today. We're representative of the safe, law-abiding citizens everywhere today. So make sure that you represent them well.
Jones instructed the armed walkers to keep their automatic handguns holstered during and to not touch their weapons. The event, Jones branded as a celebration walk, took place on Mazard Road in East Fort Smith and went on for several miles.
Yes, we had a really peaceable walk. We weren't bothered in any way by any hecklers. It was just a great time. We had a great time with each other talking and walking.
But Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel issued an advisory opinion on July 8th, stating the statute does not permit open carry, but rather applies only to travel beyond the county in which a person lives and only regards weapons and vehicles. But Steve Jones takes issue with the Attorney General's opinion.
The journey section part of it also does not prohibit open carry, as nothing in our Act 746 or any of Arkansas state law does not prohibit it.
Both Arkansas State Police Director Stan Witt and Arkansas Governor Mike Beebe have gone on record in opposition to open carry, saying the new law is too vague to support. In Arkansas, no state permit is required to purchase or possess a gun. 43 states now allow some form of open carry. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs. Albert King was born Albert Nelson on April 25, 1923, in Indianola, Mississippi, and has become the father of modern blues guitar. Albert's father, Will Nelson, also played guitar. The Nelson family, including Albert and his dozen siblings, moved to East Arkansas, first Forest City in St. Francis County, and then Osceola in Mississippi County in the early 1930s. Young Albert sang in church and grew up picking cotton and admiring guitarists Lonnie Johnson and Blind Lemon Jefferson. In Osceola, Albert joined a band called the Groove Boys. From there, beyond Osceola's own music scene, he soaked up music nearby from the nightclubs of wide open West Memphis, Arkansas.
I'm going down, down there. My nose is in the sand. I'm going down, 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 babe. My nose is in the sand. A cloud of dust have came over me. I think I'm drowning on dry land.
From the late 1940s through the 1950s, Albert King honed his craft. He lived in St. Louis, Missouri, Gary, Indiana, and Chicago, Illinois, and played drums in addition to guitar. King even briefly drummed with blues man Jimmy Reed. In 1953, while in Chicago, Albert King's first single, Bad Luck Blues, on the Parrot record label, found some regional success, but King returned to St. Louis. While there, he recorded for the city's Bobbin label and tried out the Flying V-style guitars that would become his trademark.
That's a bad way to go.
Finally, in 1961, Albert King found some national recognition when a song, Don't Throw Your Love on Me So Strong, with Ike Turner on piano, broke into the R&B Top 15. Cincinnati, Ohio's King Records, no relation, bought Albert King's contract and collected his singles for the first Albert King album the next year in 1962. In the mid-1960s, Albert King moved back to home territory and signed with Stax Records of Memphis, Tennessee. King's band in the studio was the Stax House Band, Booker T and the MGs, with the Memphis Horns, including Wayne Jackson of West Memphis. King would stay with Stax Records for the next decade, including working with Stax executive and Brinkley native Al Bell until the label's financial collapse. Albert King was a rare straight-up blues artist on Stax, which was primarily an R&B record company. But King emerged as a blues giant during his time at Stax with the 1967 release of his second album ever, Born Under a Bad Sign. Albert King's Born Under a Bad Sign album is credited with not only modernizing and revolutionizing the blues world, but strongly influencing emerging rock and roll guitar styles on both sides of the Atlantic.
If you're down and out, and you feel real hurt, come on over to the place where I was. All your loneliness, I'll
In later years, Albert King played guitar while puffing a pipe on stage. Emblazoned on King's touring bus was both a promise and another one of his well-known song titles, I'll Play the Blues For You. King was left-handed, but played right-handed guitars. Again, generally flying V guitars upside down and didn't use a guitar pick. 2013 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee Albert King died of a heart attack December 21, 1992, at his home in Memphis, Tennessee. King had played a concert in Los Angeles, California, just 2 days prior. Following a funeral procession in Memphis along Beale Street, King was buried at Paradise Garden Cemetery in nearby Edmondson, Arkansas, in southern Crittenden County, close to his childhood home, while the blues guitar work of Albert King continues to ring on through thousands of guitarists across the globe. Here in its entirety is Albert King of East Arkansas with The Hunter, from King's landmark 1967 album, Born Under a Bad Sign. Albert King, who lived and is buried in East Arkansas with The Hunter, from his groundbreaking 1967 blues album, Born Under a Bad Sign. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer of Arkansongs is Keith Merks. For more information, visit arkansongs.org. Arkansongs, since 1999.
The University of Arkansas campus is abuzz today as students begin the fall semester. Joining them is Raymond Walter. He graduated from Mountain Home High School at the age of 14. This past May, he graduated from the University of Arkansas with a Bachelor of Science in Mathematics, Physics, and Economics. He was 18, the same age as most of those incoming freshmen. And today, he enters two PhD programs. I recently spoke with Raymond inside the Carver Center for Public Radio. He did so in an electric wheelchair. See, Raymond has Duchenne muscular dystrophy, a genetic condition that affects 1 in 3,600 boys. The condition results in muscle degeneration. As such, his father, Hal Walter, must accompany him on campus, even living in student housing to care for Raymond. The two joined me inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. I began asking Raymond how his disease affects his studies.
It does add an element of urgency and a desire to reduce redundancy in whatever I do. So, for instance, in various areas of study, including mathematics, but especially in areas applying mathematics like economics or physics, you'll often take courses at a lower level of mathematical sophistication just to gain familiarity with concepts. And then you'll take a later course where you'll study the same things but at a higher level of mathematical sophistication. In my case, I was sufficiently advanced in mathematics that I could move to the courses requiring more sophistication without taking the lower level courses. So a reduced redundancy. Part of that was in the interest of getting things done faster.
Where did your interest in math and physics, where did that come from?
Well, mathematics was always an interest of mine. I presented a lot of ability in mathematics early on, and my father was a math major in college, so he could at least recognize that I had a strong interest and ability, so he encouraged it, or he facilitated it. He didn't push me to do it, but he saw what I wanted to do and encouraged me. In the case of physics, that was an interest that developed later, in part because I saw it as a potential application of mathematics, but also it was something I didn't know much about when I was younger, and it had a certain mysterious quality to it. I wanted to pursue it for that reason as well.
Well, and we are joined with your father, Hal. He's also here. So, Hal, how did you notice this gift that Raymond had for mathematics? What was it that you saw?
Well, I guess we spent a lot of time when Raymond was younger, maybe 6 or 7 years old, just talking every morning. And he knew I was a math major, so he would ask me questions, and I would try to help him with his homework. So some of it was, I could see he had the aptitude for math, but he really wasn't being given the opportunity to develop. So I turned Raymond on to algebra at about age 7, I guess.
Maybe pre-algebra then, and algebra slightly
later. Yeah, I
guess.
I just let him run with it. And, I helped him along if he needed it. And, of course, it was a slow process. But I guess just allowing him to pursue it drove his interest in it. And I think that played a big part.
Well, so this past May, you graduated with 3 degrees.
Actually, it's 1 degree, a Bachelor of Science.
Okay.
In mathematics, physics, and economics.
Well, so Hal, you, when Raymond was 14, moved with him 6 hours from your farm.
Well, 6 hours round trip.
Okay, round trip. All right. Yeah. So 3 hours.
Yeah, it was an interesting adjustment being, I guess at the time, I must have been 46 or 47, moving into a freshman dorm with Raymond. And that was quite an adjustment, 5 days a week living in a dormitory. And there really is no alternative to it. What I do for him would take 2, maybe 3 individuals to do. So it just made sense for me to come along with him. And, fortunately, Ray had some advocates at the university, namely Dave Gerhardt and Danny Pugh, that certainly streamlined, the availability of the resources to do it. And it is an odd thing to have a 50-year-old man living in a dormitory, and you get a lot of looks. And but everyone pretty much minds their own business, and so after a week or two, everyone's used to me.
Well, so what do you do while Raymond's in class? Are you going along with him while he's studying? What is a typical day like for you?
Well, typical day is little sleep, and he keeps different hours than me, so I have to do all his personal care, and then make sure, he has he's well fed and get him to class. I have to make sure he has all his study materials with him. And once he's in class, I find a perch and sit and read. Maybe make phone calls I need to for my farm business. But basically, it's a waiting game. And when he's done, we make our move to the next point on the schedule until the end of the day. And we do it all over the next day. So,
well, we do participate in the history of science reading group at the university. So that is one thing we do. I don't know if recreationally is the right word.
Together, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. It's interesting to do that. I keep busy. It is boring, though. I mean, it's very boring sitting around.
Yeah. Well, Raymond, he mentioned that he's kind of the old guy on campus, no offense. But you're kind of the young guy on campus. I mean, now that...
Only until this year was I actually older than many of the freshmen.
Right.
Campus.
So how did your peers react to having you know, this 15-year-old kid?
Well, last spring, when that article, one of the articles came out, and it said 18-year-old Raymond Walter, I had several people from that class say to me, "I didn't realize you were that young." So in many cases, people didn't realize how young I was, and which is a reasonable assumption for most people, though, you know, they did often think I looked a bit young, and there are plenty of people that did know about it, so it would often be fun to tell the story, and you get some strong reaction from a person, you know, a lot of jaws would drop. But really, I fit in fine, really. As far as I'm concerned, the age is largely not an issue.
Well, so what was a typical day like for you during your undergraduate career?
I would wake up, check my email, and start working. You know, I'd have classes, so we'd often have to get to class. Sometimes it seemed like there were too many of them that were early in the morning. But I'd spent the majority of my time studying. Either my dad would give me estimates as high as, 80 hours
a week, easy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And not to the point where he was overloaded. Add it up for yourself. If you get up at 8 o'clock in the morning and you go to bed at 11 o'clock at night, take the meals out of there, I mean, you're looking at 12 hours a day, and he would do that 7 days a week. And it wasn't that he was overworking himself. I think it was just... he had the interest, and I mean, it showed. He graduated with over 170 credits, I think.
Yeah, 173, I think.
So, but really, in the end, I don't think it was difficult. I mean, physically, some of the distractions of college life were unavailable to him. And again, you know, you asked the question about his fellow students. He, for the most part, is 10 years younger than the students in the classes he's in, and at the same grade level, he's always been 3 or 4 years younger. So there isn't that much of an opportunity for the classic socializing that you would do.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, I guess that fit his style. You know, his consumption of knowledge. So,
well, as we enter the fall 2013 semester, you're returning to the University of Arkansas to get your PhD. You're a graduate fellow this year, right?
Well, PhDs, mathematics and physics, and I am on fellowships. There's the university's Distinguished Doctoral Fellowship, which I'm considered a distinguished doctoral fellow by both the mathematics and physics departments, although it was just one fellowship. I'm also a National Science Foundation graduate research fellow.
And so Hal, will you be returning to the University of Arkansas campus again this year?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're there already, and I'll be doing the same things I've been doing. Hopefully not quite as hectic.
Why live in an on-campus facility as opposed to renting a house or an apartment?
Very accessible.
I mean, it would be preferable to me. You know, it's a little difficult cooking for somebody who has a special diet in a microwave, you know. Mm-hmm. But just the ease of moving around campus helps. And, you know, just the facility itself within the room makes it much more friendly for Raymond. You know, I personally, I'd rather be on a farm, but rather than being around a bunch of 19-year-olds. But, you know, it is what it is, and, you know, it's just a matter of convenience.
How does your wife and your mother and your siblings and other children, how do they cope without you guys throughout the week?
Well, my older brother was already in college, he hasn't been much at home. I guess it was just the first year my sister still lived at home. So she helped my mother with whatever farm chores that my mom would do when she got home from work. She's a nurse anesthetist. But now that my sister is a junior at University of Central Arkansas. And so my mother's really in charge of running the farm during the days of the week that we're in Fayetteville. So.
In addition to working about 45 hours a week. It sounds as if I have it maybe the more difficult task, and in some respects it is. But my wife works just as many hours as I do. And, you know, it's a lot to be. She's in charge of basically 500 acres by herself when I'm not there.
The Walter family is very hardworking.
Yeah, we always have been. Yeah.
Well, so two PhDs. How long, what is the completion? 3 years?
My dad would like me to finish in 3 years.
Two would be nice.
I think four is more likely.
Okay. And after the 4 years?
There's some unknowns involved in answering that question. The way I think it may go, I'm likely to be a postdoctoral researcher for a few years. Likely to be here, but there are ways I could work that way from a distance, perhaps not traveling to another place. After that, it's not my intention to remain a postdoc, and I don't expect to become a professor, and that has to do more with the physical difficulty of teaching, especially as my disease progresses, that will get more difficult.
What is it that drives you?
Best answer is that I just have a lot of fun learning. I often put it in terms of learning for the sake of learning. That's how my father and I would often put it. I enjoy learning for its own sake, and it's what I want to pursue.
All right. Well, as you begin your graduate studies, your doctoral studies, best of luck to you, Raymond. And to you as well, Hal.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Looking forward to it.
Well, I'll have fun. I hope he does, too.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle.
If you have Alzheimer's disease or think you may have Alzheimer's disease, Health Initiatives Research is seeking participants to evaluate the effectiveness and safety of an oral study drug that may slow the progression of mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease. For more information, 871-1771. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas. My co-hosts Antoinette Grajeda and Kyle Kellums will be back tomorrow, Tuesday, for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Decatur. Thank you so much for listening, and have a good Monday.